PR, Pro Cannabis Media.
Welcome back to Green Rush Live, really live on a Friday afternoon here. I'm Jimmy Young, the founder of Pro Cannabis Media and sometimes regular host of this program. I'm always welcome by and always happy to have in our room as a guest host is Josh Kincaid from Washington State, who covers the Washington beat, if you will, for our weekly We Talk News show, which will follow this really live talk show at 6 o'clock. Josh, unfortunately, we weren't able to get anybody committed to this half hour. We thought we had a few, but at the last minute, they all had issues. Let's just leave it at that. I'm not going to name names. But Josh, you were here. That much I really appreciate. Tell me, you said you've got something you'd like to discuss with me, a recent report you were looking at.
I do. I think there's a couple of things I wanted to address first. From the folks leaving comments, they wanted to know about interstate commerce and if that can happen, how that can happen. And the other one I think is going to have the same answer was about the Safe Banking Act and if companies will be able to be on a publicly traded exchange like NASDAQ, for example. Mm-hmm. Both answers are that the limitations are that there's a Schedule One.
Right.
So like the last segment with Morgan, we mentioned that if they deschedule and it's not scheduled at all, that's great. Or if it's at least not Schedule One, then there's other alternatives. But neither of those can really happen legally until that descheduling process happens. So,
and you and I both know that interstate commerce of cannabis in the United States of America has been going on for generations, illegally, right?
Jimmy, we could be making a fortune right now between arbitrage between the Seattle and the New York markets, for example, and Philly. You know, we could buy it really, really cheap here and sell it really, really expensive over there and make a killing. This is not legal.
Well, I think we just made a record of that now, so that probably wouldn't be a good thing to do, right? Right. And the other thing that I think is, again, kind of another reason why we have to have reform is the fact that flower may not be allowed to go legally across state lines, but the recipes for the manufacture of edibles, of tinctures, of other elements to titrate, to ingest into your body, that's happening because that's where all the celebrity brands are making their way from California over here in the East Coast to Massachusetts, where I'm located. So, I mean, to me, that's almost not fair.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Well, I mean, it's more expensive for these companies and the redundancies to have that. So they have to duplicate all of their standard operating procedures, the property, the plant, the equipment, the labor, everything. But that's the price of doing business right now. And so a lot of these retailers are making money. The producers aren't. The processors, if separate from the retailers and they're not vertically integrated, they're all struggling. So if Oklahoma in March goes, we'll see a lot of those 7,500 plus licenses get eviscerated because once the scaling happens, a lot of those mom and pops won't be able to keep up.
You know, the subject of MSOs came up in a conversation with myself and Tory Chamberlain, who's our news producer of We Talk News, who, by the way, will be joining us at 5:30 this afternoon. And we will argue this because I will get behind the MSOs, especially during this time of the development of the industry. And by that, I mean, in order to keep the momentum going, you need somebody, big operators, to move this needle, move the federal cannabis reform forward, pay the lobbyists. I'm sorry, that happens in America. It's part of the deal. And I understand that most of the people that complain about the MSOs complain that their weed really sucks. Okay. For the most part, it's just not good. And craft cannabis, on the other hand, is so much better and a higher quality, if you will, than most of the mass-produced MSOs. Now, there are some out there now that are learning some of the secrets of making craft cannabis level flower at the mass production level for multi-state operators. But, you know, Josh, what's your feeling about the MSOs? They're a target of every single person I talk to in this business.
They are. They're kind of like the Budweiser. They're the big guys out there. And I think they're always going to have a target out there because they have an unfair advantage having the capital in the organization. But I think everyone else had an ability to play a part in that if they wanted to. They chose not to. And this is just kind of this is how business works. Let's ask Doug Miller. Dougie Fresh, what do you think?
Hey, wait, is Doug with us? If it is, it's New Jersey at night because all I see is a dark screen. But we'll get to Doug. He's supposed to be here at 5 o'clock, which is fine. And right. I know that he has an opinion about this because he has an opinion about just about everything. But I was at a very impressive investor summit in New York last week that was put together by ArcView. Now, ArcView is a fund that was started by Steve D'Angelo and Troy Dayton 10 years ago. Was active for about five of those 10 years, kind of went off the rails a little bit, and now they're starting to rejigger themselves, if you will, and come back out to the market. And they had a great conference. The quality of the people I met there, the investor groups that I was able to be introduced to and met there, it was pretty amazing to me as an outsider looking in at this point in time. There is money out there for investment for cannabis operators. You just may have to look for it harder, and you may have to work a little harder on finding out just how to approach them. But ArcView gave an opportunity for everybody to do that. And I want to congratulate Jeff Finkel and Gene Sullivan, two of the principals at ArcView, for really running a great show. And I really enjoyed it. Josh, what's your feeling? What's your read? And you're someone who can look at the tea leaves in the financial markets and actually see trending and that sort of thing. Are you starting to see more of the cannabis investment money being loosened up? Or is everybody still more cautious, waiting for the midterms, waiting to see what happens with our inflation recession, which always seems to change every month?
Definitely more on the sidelines, and that kind of capital crunch that's been around for a couple of years is still there. Steep decline in that capital raise year to date when you compare it to last year, even still. So it's not getting any better. But some of the sectors that mostly get that have historically been getting capital is cultivation and retail. So, they're less than 2% of the equity that's raised year to date, according to Viridian Capital Advisors. That's compared to 52% last year. So that's happening for a couple of reasons. They think that MSOs have been able to use that equity in acquisitions, so they don't have to really come up with extra money. They just use their shares out of nowhere. Then you have tier one MSOs that have a strong capital position. So they have money, but they don't know what to do with it. And then you have a greater availability and better pricing of debt. So there's also FOMO. So you have investors that are willing to take anything, and debt is at the historic high. There's never been more debt issuance out there, and investors are taking it. So why not keep issuing it?
Right. And isn't debt the American way?
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not quite sure that I understand all that, but I definitely understand.
Bonds are debts, just as a reminder. So debt and equity.
That much I think I can understand. It was one of the first things that was asked of the 15 representatives of venture capitalist groups that were at the ArcView conference. Jamie Pearson was able to moderate this kind of a free-for-all in this big room. And I thought she did a great job. And I asked the first question because you know how it is at a press conference. Nobody wants to ask the first question. Me, I can ask the first question because we had just talked about debt financing versus equity financing. And sure enough, that generated about four or five different comments from different people. And there was some discussion, which was better, which was, better than the other one. And I don't think that there is a cut and dry feeling about that. I think it depends on each deal. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, each deal, each segment, each region, they all have their own variables. And I think it's all kind of starting to normalize. For example, we're starting to see a lot less sales on 420. It's just becoming kind of a normal day because during the pandemic, a lot of people a lot of retailers were issuing steep discounts. This store right next to me has 30% off 3 days a week. So what's the draw on 420? There really isn't one. So right now we're seeing a lot more sales during Thanksgiving and Christmas.
That's a normalization process right there. People party over the holidays, right?
Right. Yeah.
And they don't need to fake partying on 420, even though we all, you know, wink, wink, that's a big holiday. You know, I still had to explain it to some people down in New York too, where it all began and all that neat stuff. But that's another story. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that report that you mentioned earlier is a headset report. It's called Analyzing U.S. Cannabis Sales Trends to Understand Holiday Demand. So it kind of goes over what to expect this Thanksgiving and Christmas and how that time period is really going to overtake sales and has really over last year before, and probably will continue that. And so we can kind of get into some of those reasons about why that time period is going to create more sales and discounts, and what's the trending behind that, some of the analytics behind that as well.
And the other thing that I also took part in, there were three conferences that I took part in last week. Okay. One was the sixth annual Burns and Levinson State of the Cannabis Industry Conference. That was outside of Boston. Then the ArcView conference, and then, because I'm a glutton for punishment, driving from Brooklyn to Newark, New Jersey, which took me 3 hours to go about 13 miles, I think it is. Okay. Now, granted, I didn't leave until 4 o'clock, so I was screwed, basically. But each one of those conferences that I was at had a different flavor to it. And I found that kind of fascinating between the three. Whereas the Real Cannabis Entrepreneur event, and we're going to have two people that I met there on at the top of the hour with us. And I think you already mentioned Doug. Do you know him, by the way?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you're reading the fine print on the Zoom wall, which is 15 feet away from me, which means I can't see that. Okay. So I get it. Anyway, back to the impressions. The Real Cannabis Business Entrepreneur, run by Gary George, was really kind of a completely different element. You know, New York and New Jersey are two different states from the New England area. You've got, now granted, Connecticut still gets kind of grandfathered into the tri-state area. But if you're in New England, you know, the people that, it's Hartford is the middle city in the middle of Connecticut. And the people that are east of Hartford are Red Sox fans, and the ones that are west are Yankees fans. I mean, that's kind of the divider in Connecticut as far as the tri-state area. But I got to tell you, there is a lot of excitement in New York and New Jersey about what's to come. And even though they're still going through, both states are still going through their early stages of development, there's going to be huge opportunities down there, Josh. Mm-hmm. And it's because they have the benefit, I think, of being two of the bigger populated states getting into the game with the ability to look at what Massachusetts did, what Maine did, what Washington State did, what Colorado did. California is still trying to figure it out because Steve DeAngelo talked about how when they had just the medical program, that was working great. That was his words. It was working great. And then they brought in adult use, if you will, and it's totally mucked up all the regulations. And, you know, he's needless to say, was pretty down on that whole thing. So lessons learned of all those lessons, Josh, and you've been sitting there looking at this now for a number of years. What do you think is the most important thing that a state can do as it starts a cannabis industry with regulations and compliance? What's the smartest thing that they should be doing?
I think they should be looking at some of the petri dish experiments like Washington and learning from them and realizing that some of the some of the restrictions you were trying to place didn't have the outcomes you were anticipating, like not allowing for outside investment was going to somehow restrict diversion into the, you know, the black market. And you can't really stop that. What you're doing is just limiting those license holders and small business owners and entrepreneurs the ability to get capital when everything, their other abilities are restricted. So yeah, I would say just maybe, although it sounds crazy, just with the cafes I'm dealing with now, you know, we're kind of restricted to this co-op or this membership model, which should just be open to the public, but they're not ready for it yet. So I hate the idea of saying, well, let's just pass the law and then wait for something to change. And then 10 years in Washington and it hasn't changed. So it's hard for me to kind of be optimistic, but I wish the government would be more optimistic and allow those rules to just flow, because I think we're a lot more mature and I don't think it's going to be as wild as they think.
Well, again, I who knows? This is why we love this kind of open forum, because everybody has their own observations about what's going on in their home state. And this show always has people from different parts of the country. In fact, I can see one in here from Washington State. Medical was great too. So the medical program that was instituted by Washington State has Miggy's approval.
Yeah, I mean, Washington State had a really good medical program. A lot of states could have learned a lot from that. There was great access, availability, pricing, consistency. My medical provider that I had for a long time left for Arizona, and now I'm left with, you know, inconsistency and strains changing and all that stuff. So Washington had a great medical program. People could have learned a lot from that.
Is it a drug or a plant, Josh?
Is it a drug or a plant? Wow. That's deep. I'd say yes. Because it comes, you know, it's like chicken or the egg. I think it's a plant that's definitely, once you start isolating cannabinoids and then the pharmaceutical industry gets a hold of it, it definitely, Marinol sucks. I don't think Marinol is anything close to cannabis. I have a friend of mine took that for his MS when he was still alive. And it didn't do anything for him except make him pass out. But I think true derivatives of cannabinoids will be medicine.
Yeah. And again, go ahead.
I was going to say, is medicine as a drug? Like that, I think it's a drug. There, I mean, if you're talking about dependency versus addiction, that's a completely different subject.
A completely different subject. And it's one that I've asked many addiction experts about. And, you know, the biggest question, in as Dr. Peter Grinspoon reminded me again, that's a discussion in every psychology medical school in the world. What is the line between addiction and dependency? And if you're dependent on something that actually has healthy benefits for you, is that an addiction? Or is that you're just taking a vitamin that's in kind of, again, this is a very delicate subject, but you know, I'm of the opinion, and I say it every time we close out these shows, is learn about it and use it responsibly. Mm-hmm. Because in small, regulated doses, and of course, look, I take about 1,000 milligrams of CBD a day, all right, just to get my inflammation somewhat manageable with my arthritis. But that's called a therapeutic dose. Now, you have a friend who had MS, Josh. So they're looking for even more potency, even more of milligrams in their system. I know people who function on 100 milligrams of THC cannabis every day. Mm-hmm.
So well, I think that's the difference, is it can you still function, or does it limit your ability to get things done? Like, you know, I'm studying for an investment license. I can't use THC during the day, but I definitely want to use cannabis, THC, I should say, because CBD doesn't, I don't have that full entourage effect.
Yeah. Interesting. You know, again, everybody's, this is the thing about this particular plant medicine, is it impacts people differently. And what might work for you and give you a kind of a sedative effect would maybe give me more focus. And that's that therein lies. And medicine, they want it to be science.
Jimmy, we're on the same page here, but because I don't have access to the right particular cultivar to give me that focus that I know is out there, I'm still like, I just went and got, it was a 6-year anniversary at a shop, 50% off. So I'm like, oh, I'll get this $200 ounce I've never tried for $100. It's like the worst thing I've ever tried. I've had $30 ounces that were better than that garbage. So whoever's growing that, it was trash, you know. But if I could get the same thing over and over, I could definitely get that, you know, euphoric, uplifting, energetic focus from a Blue Dream circa 2015 and, or, you know, even before that. But it's not available, you know, consistently. So how do you get something that that you really want, like a Matanuska Thunderfuck or something like that?
By the way, I think I actually tasted 2015 Blue Dream and found it to be exceptional. I got it in California.
It was great.
But it's not the same as the Blue Dream that I get here in Massachusetts. I can tell you that right now. It's just not, even though they come from the same cultivar. And how do we know as consumers, you know, really? Is this really what that is? I mean, maybe you can tell. There are a lot of connoisseurs out there, ganjiers, right? Ganjiers, the experts who can smell a bud. And I'd love to see this, by the way. Blind smell test, which here are the five cultivars. Blind smell test. Who can tell which one is which just by the smell? And you and I both know there are people out there that can do this.
Yeah, I saw one the other day where it was like, you know, Coke Zero, Coke Vanilla, Pepsi and something else. And like people got all five of them right. And I'm like, man, shame on you for getting all those right. But it would be great at the same time if it was cannabis and somebody could get all five of those right. Then it'd be high fiving them like, hey, that's nicely done.
And there's nothing better than the original Coke recipe. I'm sorry.
Coke Cherry was another one, by the way.
Yeah, but that was a made for TV Coca-Cola. You know, that's the way I look at that one. That's the way I look at that one. I'm just talking about the original recipe that has been tried to be
with Coke in it.
Of Coke, right? Well, I didn't actually add that in, but yes, that that's
not that old. It, isn't it? I thought you were that old, Jimmy. My bad.
I am that old. Yes, I am. Hey, speaking of which, we've got a couple of guests that I met from New Jersey that are due to come on in a few minutes with us, and we'll be talking a little bit about that market. And also, I want to get into the Delta 8 discussion. Because now everybody who's out there who is using Delta 8, and this is basically just people I talk to at these various conferences, understand that Delta 8 will get you high. Mm-hmm. And again, while the big picture, everybody wants to know what they put in their body and what they, and it's been tested so that when you go, you can get some kind of a consistent product. This is why we have a legal movement going on. At least that is the utopian goal, right? Reality is completely different. And we're going to talk more about reality and get into the New Jersey scene in just a few minutes. Don't go away. Green Rush Live continues after this.
With that, we're going to roll this one up. I'm Josh Kincaid. This is The Talking Hedge. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, or don't. And I'm out. Don't forget to smash that like button on your way out. Check out these other videos that we've got.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
I'm Larry Mishkin, and I'd like to invite you to join Rob Hunt and me on our weekly podcast, The Deadhead Cannabis Show. Each week, we explore the latest cannabis and jam band news and reminisce with other deadheads and jam band lovers about the great musical acts that we've seen and heard. Check out a new episode every Monday.